to talk to you guys today about some of my research. This is work I've been doing with my advisor, Dan Sun, and also with a postdoc at UChicago, Mikhail Goichman. And we're studying dense fermionic matter with Chern-Simons interactions in the large end limit. So I'll get to the details of the precise theory that we're going to be talking about for the duration of this talk later on, but let me first tell you why it's an important theory. And that's because large end Chern-Simons with fermions is a solvable theory at any value of the coupling constant in the large end limit. So when I mean solvable, I mean that there are many aspects of it which you can obtain to any order in the coupling constant in a 1 over n expansion. So for this reason, it's kind of a unique theory. This is a regime that we usually don't have a lot of analytic control over at strong coupling. So it's interesting if only for that. And for this reason, it's been used as a playground for high energy theorists who are investigating quantum field theory at strong coupling. This is hardly an exhaustive list, but a few of the things that have been studied in this theory include, for instance, a conjectured bosonization duality that this theory is supposed to admit, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. It is also the conformal version is supposed to admit a gravity dual in terms of a higher spin theory on ADS. And recently, there's been a lot of work in evaluating the exact S matrices of these theories and finding whatever novel properties that they can. So our approach is, I'm a condensed matter physicist, but this is just a quantum field theory. And you can also ask condensed matter questions and investigate it with the point of trying to understand material properties for strongly correlated systems at finite density. So I'm going to begin just with a brief introduction of what this theory is to set the stage. Most of the time, I'm going to be investigating the Fermi liquid state of this system and see what we can learn about strongly coupled Fermi liquids in 2+1 dimensions. We'll see most of the interesting aspects which we're going to run into are specific to 2+1 dimensions. I have a section discussing linear transport, but I somehow suspect I'm not going to have enough time for that. So if we do, I'll probably come to that in the end. But then I'll wrap up with discussing a different regime from the Fermi liquid state, but specifically the strong coupling limit, what physics is there in this Fermi gas at any temperature, and we'll find the existence of a novel regime that is probably best understood in terms of a weakly coupled bosonic description. And then I'll just wrap up with some outlook. So what is this theory that I'm going to be talking about for the next hour or so, less than an hour? We have NF massive 2+1 dimensional Dirac fermions, psi I here goes from 1 to NF, and they transform in the fundamental of SUNF. The only interaction between these fermions is mediated by a Chern-Simons gauge field at level KF. So this is a SUNF gauge field, a non-abelian gauge field, which is minimally coupled to the fermions. There are no dynamical degrees of freedom here because this is just a Chern-Simons gauge field. And really all you have are holonomies, which are going to be important to us later on. But the gluons themselves are not dynamical. They're really just fermions with fluxes attached. And as I said before, the unique aspect of this theory is that it becomes exactly solvable in the Et-Hooft limit, in which one takes both the rank and the level of the gauge group to infinity so that their ratio is held fixed. And their ratio, which I'm going to be calling lambda F, is the Et-Hooft coupling and will serve as the coupling constant for our theory. So why is this an exactly solvable field theory? It's really for the same reason that if you go to your copy of Sidney Coleman's Aspects of Symmetry and you open up to 1+1 dimensional QED, it's the same reason as there. You have the usual topological restrictions on on the types of diagrams that you can write down. But above and beyond that, you can also choose a gauge in which all of the interactions, self-interactions between the gluons vanish. So we simply have this triple A term here, and if we just choose one of the components to be zero, we don't have to worry about this. This is what happens in 1+1 dimensional QED, and while that story doesn't generalize to higher dimensions, it does work for a Chern-Simons interaction in 2+1 dimensions. So in particular, we're going to be choosing the light cone gauge, A minus equals zero, and then between the topological restrictions from the large N limit and the further cutting down on the diagrams you can write due to the lack of the self-interaction, there's really not much you can write down. As an example, if you're trying to evaluate the fermion self-energy, really the only diagrams you can write down are the so-called rainbow diagrams, where you just have one gluon propagator on top of another without any intersections. And when those are the only things you can write down, they actually admit an exact, you can write down an exact recursion relation for summing up all of these diagrams. This is an integral equation for the self-energy sigma, and it's sufficiently simple that you can just solve this integral equation and get to the exact self-energy. So this is how all these computations really go, and I'm not gonna do the details in this talk, but this is the basic story. And the fact that you could get the self-energy was noted in 2011 by these authors. And since then, there's been just a flood of work trying to compute absolutely whatever you can in this theory. In particular, there's been a number of multipoint correlation functions of conserved currents. And remarkably, even the exact equation of state at any temperature and chemical potential. Yes?
So
I say light cone gauge because we're working in Euclidean space. Actually, this is it's light cone gauge, but with X1 or A1 minus A2. So this is convenient because it's a rotationally invariant gauge. So it's just gonna be nice to have rotational invariance throughout our calculation. Right. So and then just one detail which I have to note before we continue is once you see these results, you'll see that this theory actually only exists when the Hoeft coupling constant is between -1 and +1, with the theory actually approaching infinite coupling as you tune the magnitude of lambda f to 1. So for instance, if lambda f is strictly equal to 1, the equation of state vanishes. There are no degrees of freedom in this theory. So for us, the infinite coupling limit will be lambda goes to 1. Are there any questions on this before I continue? Okay. Right. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention probably the main avenue of research for this theory, which I'm not going to have too much to say about myself, but perhaps 70% of the work on this theory has been investigating a bosonization duality that it's conjectured to admit. And the idea here is, although I phrased the system in terms of fundamental fermionic degrees of freedom, really the physical excitations are anions, not fermions, because we have the flux attachment that comes with the Chern-Simons gauge field. Any fermion I place in the system has some gauge flux attached that transmutes these statistics, and the modified statistics are then 1/2 1 minus lambda f. There's no particular reason. Yes?
But we know that statistics should be discrete. Here, lambda is a continuum.
Right, so that's basically just an artifact of the large N limit. If you were not working in the large N limit, lambda f is always just a rational number. So really, this is a system of anions, and we can also write down a bosonic description for the same system. So this is, we now have NB bosons, phi I, I've suppressed the I index, transforming in SUNB. They interact with a Chern-Simons gauge field at level KB, and then they have some phi to the fourth coupling, B to the four, or B sub four. And specifically, the fermionic theory that I wrote down before is dual to the critical limit of this theory, in which you take MB and B4 to infinity, K keeping the pole mass MB critical fixed. And the details of this duality aren't going to be too important for us, except to note these formulas here. This is a generalization of level rank duality of pure Chern-Simons gauge theory. So in particular, the number of bosonic colors is related to the number of fermionic colors by Kf minus Nf, and the level of the Chern-Simons field flips sign. If you phrase this in terms of the Ed-Hooft coupling constants, then the bosonic interaction strength is lambda f minus sine of lambda f, so that if lambda f is close to 1 or negative 1, lambda b is close to 0, and vice versa. So this is actually a strong weak coupling duality in addition to being a Bose-Fermi duality. So I will remind you of this when we need it, but for the majority of this talk, we will not. And I'm going to be considering just the pure fermionic theory, and we're going to drop all the sub Fs and sub Bs because it will always be understood that I'm working with fermions. Right. So some of the main results of our work concern the Fermi liquid state that this system has at low temperatures. I'll try to convince you that it is a Fermi liquid later on. So I'm just going to review Landau Fermi liquid theory just to set notation and make sure we're all on the same page. So Landau Fermi liquid theory is a phenomenological theory of interacting cold fermions, and it is really a feat of intuition. What you do is you assume that you have a well-defined Fermi surface with long-lived quasi-particle excitations in the neighborhood of that Fermi surface. So this tells you what you can do is you can write down a quasi-particle distribution function as a function of the momentum of those quasi-particles, and then it's some small perturbation away from the zero temperature distribution which exhibits a Fermi surface. So here N0 is the zero temperature one, and you have some small perturbation delta N. You can then write down the energy of a single quasi-particle as a expansion in the perturbation around the zero temperature state. So at zeroth order, you just have the free quasi-particle energy. And then at the next order, which is usually the only order that you keep to, you have the interaction energy of this quasi-particle with the rest of the density that you've added to the system. So this is the interaction of P with the quasi-particle at momentum K. And then just note that I'm going to specifically be talking about the 2 plus 1 dimensional relativistic case. So some of the formulas that I reference in the slides to come will be slightly different from the usual textbook formulas, but all differences can be chalked up to this. So we can make a few simplifications to the description I just gave you. For instance, if we're considering a low temperature state, then we would expect that this delta NK is very highly concentrated just at the Fermi surface. And that, in combination with rotational invariance, which we'll be assuming, tells you that this function of four variables is in fact just a function of one, an interaction strength that depends on the angle subtended, that these quasi-particles subtend on the Fermi surface. And then it's convenient to parameterize this function in terms of the so-called Landau parameters, which is just a Fourier expansion of this function. And then the program of Landau Fermi liquid theory is to calculate whatever low temperature observables you can. And the claim is that you can do that in terms of these Landau parameters, F0, F1, et cetera. As just a very simple example of something that we're going to be checking later on, something that you can obtain very easily within this picture is the isothermal inverse compressibility, which is the change in the pressure if you do a fractional change in the volume at constant temperature. By some thermodynamic identities, you can bring it into this form so that all you need to evaluate is d mu dN at constant T. But this is something that we can very easily do given the setup that I've just given you. The change in the chemical potential has two origins. One is the change in the location of the Fermi surface due to the increased density that you've given, and the other is due to the interactions of this density with itself. you can simply evaluate this in terms of the Landau parameters and find that the inverse compressibility is determined only by the effective mass and the zeroth Landau parameter F0. There's a similar story, which I'm not going to recount here, in which you can calculate the effective mass in terms of only the chemical potential and the first Landau parameter. And then knowing the effective mass, you actually know the low temperature limit of the specific heat. It's just linear, and its slope is entirely determined by the effective mass. So this is the usual story of Landau-Fermi liquid theory, but it was noted also in 2004 by Haldane that in 2+1 dimensions, you actually do need an additional parameter in order to entirely characterize the t equals zero state, and that is the Berry phase as you carry a quasi-particle around the Fermi surface. And that Berry phase is in fact identically the anomalous Hall conductivity sigma h. So here A is the Berry curvature determined in terms of the quasi-particle wave functions u. So these are the things that we're going to be checking for our theory to understand its Fermi liquid state. There are certainly plenty of other things you could check, but we'll find enough interest just here to keep us occupied. So these four things, kappa, m star, cv, and sigma are the things we'll be looking at. Right, so now let's turn to the specific theory we're interested. So it was demonstrated that this system in the large n limit exhibits a Fermi surface for all values of the coupling at t equals to zero. For those of you who may be looking at this later, this paper didn't quite do the computation correctly because they don't include holonomies. But you can do the correct computation, which I'll discuss a bit later on, and you will see a Fermi surface. So assuming then that our system does in fact form a Fermi liquid, then we can try to test these predictions of Landau-Fermi liquid theory. We can calculate the Landau parameters Fn directly from microscopics, and then also calculate those things that the Landau parameters are supposed to be calculating within the phenomenological theory and do a comparison. So there's a deceptively simple formula for how to compute f of theta. Here v is the the one particle irreducible 4-point function of fermions. P and K are the incoming momenta, quasi-particle momenta on the Fermi surface, and Q is the exchange momenta, which we take to zero in some particular order of limits. But the one particle irreducible 4-point function is just something which obeys an exact recursion relation given the simplifications that come with the large n limit. And you can set up a big nasty integral equation which you can just solve, and it's not fun at all, but once you do it, you can find that remarkably there is actually only a single zero non-zero Landau parameter. That's just f of zero. It takes this form. Here C0 is unfortunate terminology that people have settled on in this subject for the pole mass. So C0 is the quasi-particle pole mass, which is related to the Bare parameters in this way up to issues with regularization.
Can you remind us what the relationship again is?
That's right. So you have to be a little more careful than what I've demonstrated here because there are multiple channels for color exchanges. So I really wrote down one. So there's, you know, an anti-symmetric channel, a symmetric channel for the color indices, and I believe it's F1 in the anti-symmetric channel that you would have to look at. Say again?
There's only an F0.
That's right, yes. Uh-huh. So now that we know F0, we can simply calculate some of these things that we talked about a few slides back. In particular, you'll get this answer for the inverse compressibility, and you'll find that the effective mass simply is the chemical potential. But the Green's function and the equation of state have already been calculated in the literature, so we can just match to those expressions, and you will find that they agree precisely. So that's good. It would be a real problem if things broke down here because this theory of Landau parameters has a very rigorous microscopic justification. And if if that didn't go through, there's really no sense in which this would be a Fermi liquid. So let's move on to some more interesting things that did not match our expectations. But the takeaway from what I'm saying is that Landau-Fermi liquid theory is correct insofar as it goes, but it needs to be further augmented to characterize some other low temperature observables other than these. The first one that I'm going to talk about is the Hall conductivity. So we can perform a computation of the Hall conductivity actually at arbitrary frequency, but at zero frequency, we'll get this simple result here. We can also contrast that against a direct computation of the Berry phase for a quasiparticle about the Fermi surface, and we will find this contribution. And we see that this is found here, but there's also a correction at non-zero coupling. So this indicates the need to augment Berry-Fermi liquid theory in order to completely characterize the parity odd transport of Fermi liquids in 2+1 dimensions. And this is work that's currently being undertaken by some of my coworkers at UChicago. The other aspect which didn't quite meet with our expectations was the low temperature specific heat. If you recall before, it was determined only by the effect of mass. Here we also have that the slope is proportional to the effect of mass, but there's some function of the coupling strength out front. And how should we understand this? This is something we do understand very well, and I'll try to convince you that it's simply the result of a Chern-Simons mediated interaction.
So how do you determine that?
You can determine it directly from the two particle or single particle Green's function.
Which is an
right. So yeah, it's admittedly not gauge invariant. that's how I've gotten at it though. And it does at least match with expectations that we get from a computation of the Landau parameters. So this matching is against what you get from the Green's function.
When you say, okay, Fermi liquid has to be augmented by
I mean, simply that the single additional parameter that Haldane gave is not enough to... Exactly. So you need more, and you need to know how to compute those from within a microscopic quantum field theory. And that's what my friends are undertaking to do. That's right. Exactly. Okay, so how should we understand this function, 1 minus lambda squared? So let's just kind of remind ourselves of the textbook derivation of how you would get this formula without this function out front. And that can really be demonstrated directly by an evaluation of the entropy density using the quasiparticle occupation number just being the Fermi-Dirac distribution. So the entropy density is just some combinatorial object that can be directly evaluated from here. And doing so, then you can differentiate with respect to the temperature and get the specific heat and find it's proportional to m star. For us, this fails. And to see why, let's return to the occupation number in terms of the Green's function. So typically, we have our occupation number NP is the trace of the Green's function, and you have to do a sum over Matsubara frequencies on the thermal circle. So those are these Matsubara frequencies here. And then in the presence of a non-zero chemical potential, there's also a shift that comes from the chemical potential. And once you've done the sum, if you do it for the Green's function we have in our theory, you will get exactly this, and the story goes through. But the issue is, in the presence of a gauge field, this is modified by holonomies about the thermal circle. So if you have a non-zero holonomy wrapping the thermal circle, then you must have, modified boundary conditions, so that gives you a new Matsubara frequency, this contribution AI here, where AI is a holonomy eigenvalue. Now, typically, you can set, these can be consistently set to zero and usually would be zero at low temperatures, and none of this affects the story above. However, it was demonstrated by these authors back in 2012 that for Chern-Simons theories, this is actually forbidden. And the idea here is that the holonomies of a Chern-Simons gauge theory are actually, or the eigenvalues, are fermionic degrees of freedom, so that the state where all of the eigenvalues are set to zero is forbidden by the Pauli exclusion principle. So these authors then demonstrated that for this theory in the thermodynamic limit, the holonomies are in fact uniformly distributed about zero. So here, because we're working at large n, we no longer have the discrete index I. You have some holonomy eigenvalue density, rho of alpha, and the density is uniformly distributed about zero, whose width is determined by lambda here. The idea here basically is that if you assume homogeneity, you can rephrase the Chern-Simons action in terms of just the holonomies around the thermal circle. And then when you do a change of variables to the holonomy eigenvalues, you pick up a Vandermonde determinant, which in the path integral measure, which suppresses the probabilities whenever any two of them are the same. So now taking into the account that these eigen, yeah. That's right. So this is, right, so you can have a zero eigenvalue, but not all of them can be zero.
Is there some, all the eigenvalues can be constant zero within this?
No, so what I'm saying is, sir, at least in the discrete picture, what you would have is something like this. So you'd have some discrete index. You'd have a holonomy here, and then as you add more, they would basically fill up uniformly about this axis. So this is I, and this is alpha I. And this is just the continuum version. That's right, exactly. Exactly, that's right, yes. Any other questions? Okay. So we can just restore these holonomies into the story that I mentioned earlier. That just shifts the chemical potential by I alpha. You do a sum over all the holonomy eigenvalues, and you will find that you get a modified specific heat and that you need a single additional parameter G. So here we have 1 plus G, where G is determined entirely by this holonomy distribution in the following way. You can simply compute this in our case and find that it gives this minus lambda squared factor that we had before. So this is an additional parameter which is necessary to characterize Landau Fermi liquids in the presence of a Chern-Simons gauge field. This is how to compute it from microscopics, and we see that it in fact matches what we get. And just to give you a picture of what's going on, this is what the distribution function looks like as a function of the interaction strength due to the modifications from the holonomies. So here, blue is at lambda equals zero. This is all at the same dimensionless temperature. So blue is the Fermi-Dirac distribution. And then as we increase the coupling strength, it actually seems to sharpen the Fermi surface. How much time do I have? Right. Okay, so I think I have time for this. So one other thing that we took the opportunity to do, so long as we could, is we have an exactly solvable field theory. Let's just compute whatever we can. So in particular, we took the opportunity to compute linear response coefficients to all orders in the coupling. So in particular, we're going to be looking at the conductivity tensor sigma and the viscosity tensor eta. And these can be evaluated by Kubo formulas in the following way. And the point is that these are just, you know, some two-point functions, and we know how to evaluate two-point functions of currents That's been done in the literature, but it's never been done at finite density before. So the idea is you have some vertex function due to an insertion of either the current or the stress tensor. And you can solve that vertex function because it obeys some recursion relation that looks like this. So this is for an insertion of the current. This is for an insertion of the stress tensor. And then once you know these, you can tie up the ends and just get the two-point functions that you want. And you get a bunch of big, nasty formulas, but the interesting results are as follows. There's the zero-frequency Hall conductivity, which I've already discussed. There's also the zero-frequency Hall viscosity, which we find in the non-relativistic limit takes this form, 1/4 1 minus lambda times n. And this should look a little familiar. This is basically a formula, an identity due to Reed, which he proved for non-relativistic gap states back in 2008, that the Hall viscosity at zero frequency should generically be half the spin density of the system. So in our case, the spin is this anionic spin, 1/2 1 minus lambda. And the interesting aspect here is we don't have a gapped system, so the usual arguments that you would use to prove this fail, and we really weren't expecting to see this. So it's just kind of interesting, and even though it's just an example, it indicates it may be true more generally, and there's a question is really how general is this then? So are there any questions on that before I move on?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So could you go to the plot showing this distribution function?
Sure.
So you mentioned that as you crank up the coupling, the distribution somehow, the jump somehow becomes sharper and sharper.
Mm-hmm.
Does it imply that the Z actually becomes so how does Z, the quasi-particle spectral wave evolve with the function of coupling?
Yeah, so Z unfortunately has very boring behavior. It's just one throughout the whole thing.
It doesn't get rewind at all.
Right, uh-huh, yeah.
So this is kind of the behavior, so how should I understand? So should I think of this as this modified Fermi-Dirac distribution comes from the fact that the particles are not necessarily truly fermions?
That's right. I hesitate to say that because I'm not sure. Because this is definitely a very fermionic description that we're doing. This is the occupation number of the fermionic. I would be unsure if you say went to the bosonic description if you'd see something like this. But certainly the quasi-particle distribution function within this description appears to look fermionic with a sharper jump. I'm not sure I've answered your question. Yes.
Bacteria phylons. So can I think of that as some kind of chemical potential for those shift in the chemical potential?
The what of the holonomies?
Bacteria phylons.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And then can that question be observed in the shift in the forming?
I'm not sure. So in the expression for the specific heat, the Fermi momentum doesn't directly appear. It's just the. Say again.
There was an N.
There is an N, right? The number of colors. So I've dropped the sub Fs that I had before. Yeah. Yeah. This is just NF from before. Just entirely in the effective mass.
That's the local property momentum space. There must be information about the size.
About the size of what?
The Fermi surface.
The Fermi surface. Is there usually in the specific heat? I thought the story was usually that it's only determined by this. So I mean the size of the Fermi surface.
So N star you said is determined from the spectral function.
That's right, yes.
So that's at a given moment, at a given specimen.
That's right, they expanded around the frozen surface, yeah. That's right, yeah.
That is a property that is local in the moment. Doesn't care about
right.
The size of the concept.
Uh-huh, yes. So, I mean, the size of the Fermi surface doesn't. The size of the Fermi surface doesn't actually, in our case, depend on lambda. So basically, we're working at constant density. So at constant density, mu is fixed. It's just I'm trying to remember. N goes like mu squared minus c zero squared. So this being the pole mass that we had earlier. So, and there's actually no dependence on the coupling here. So the size of the at fixed density, the size of the Fermi surface does not change as you vary the coupling. I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but. That's right. I'm trying to remember the exact formula. I think this is just. So this is n pf squared over 4 pi. That's right. Okay, so now I'm just going to change gears a little bit. 1 second. Right, okay. So up until this point, I've been really talking entirely about the ultra-cold system, so T much less than the degeneracy temperature, so that I can think of this in the Fermi liquid state. But now I'm going to be talking about a different regime, and that's the strongly coupled Fermi gas at any temperature. I'm also going to be doing the non-relativistic limit for ease, the important part is that we're going to be taking lambda goes to 1. So the non-relativistic limit is basically that the chemical potential and the temperature are very small in comparison to the mass energy of the system. So in particular, the chemical potential is going to be some small shift away from the minimum of the band. And so that this delta mu and T are small in comparison to C0, but their ratio could be arbitrary. Equivalently, this is the regime where the Fermi velocity is small compared to the speed of light. So the Fermi velocity takes this form in the specific theory. And in this limit, you'll find this is delta mu over C0, which is far less than 1. Now we can apply this limit to the known exact equation of state, which was evaluated by these guys in 2013. And the equation of state is kind of a complicated beast. It involves solving a set of gap equations for C0. So these two equations here, together determine C0 as a function of the temperature and the chemical potential. And then once you know the result for the gap, then you can just plug it into here and get the free energy. And let's begin by examining this equation of state in the extreme high temperature limit. You can do a lot of work, and you will find that you get that PV equals NKT, which is kind of nice. but once we know that, we can ask the following question. At what temperature does the classical limit, this ideal gas law that we're getting out, when does this start to break down? And we can examine this as a function of the coupling. In order to do that, we perform a virial expansion of the equation of state in the dimensionless temperature. And we find that we get this ideal gas law. So I've set KB to 1 here. We get the ideal gas law, then corrections due to this second virial coefficient, which we can evaluate from the equation of state given on the previous slide. It takes this form. And then specifically in the strong coupling limit, we find that the second virial coefficient actually diverges as you send the strength to infinity. So what this tells us is it becomes increasingly difficult to heat the system up to a state where it's effectively ideal, because this term is going to be ever more important as lambda goes to one. And there's a breakdown in the classical transition. It goes to infinity as lambda goes to one, and it goes to infinity as 1/(1 − λ). You can also do a similar analysis at low temperatures and say, okay, how does the transition temperature to the Fermi liquid state depend on the coupling? And you will find that it doesn't. You get this factor that we were discussing before, and then plus exponential corrections that are just always numerically small regardless of the strength of the coupling. So that the Fermi liquid regime always sets in really around the same area, less than this quantum degeneracy temperature, and over basically the density per color and over big N. So between these two things, this implies the existence of an extended intermediate regime that exists between the classical and Fermi liquid phases, and it's a regime that only exists at strong coupling. And just to orient ourselves, this is kind of a picture of what's going on. Here's the specific heat in units of the density as a function of the dimensionless temperature. And the transition to the Fermi liquid state occurs right around here. And we see below here we have a linear regime whose slope is decreasing as you turn up the coupling. And then for relatively low coupling, such as this blue line, it quickly saturates to a constant. But as you go stronger and stronger, you start to exhibit this new regime, which appears to be approximately linear, and then you saturate to a constant, you know, far later on. So you can graph what is the slope of this new intermediate regime that we're observing, and that's what we have here. This blue line is the Fermi liquid regime, which has slope π/6, 1 − λ², just as we were discussing before. And then this intermediate regime, we've numerically evaluated the slope and find that as the slope or as the interaction strength goes to one, the slope approaches a linear curve with slope π/6, 1 − λ. Right now, this is just kind of a numerical observation, but I'll try to convince you in a moment that this formula is in fact the exact formula. So now we know this regime exists, but within this picture, it's kind of mysterious. We can't really say much about what the physics of this regime is just by looking at the equation of state. So let's try to understand that for a second. And I'm going to try to convince you that this can be understood really as a weakly interacting quantum Bose gas that starts to emerge in the strongly coupled fermionic description. And the idea there is that in the bosonic theory, the quantum effects become apparent around the usual degeneracy temperature. This is just basically at zero coupling in the bosonic picture. So we have some TQ boson equals N/NbM₀. But the important point is that the transition temperature is the density per number, per color in the theory. And the Bose-Fermi duality changes the number of color degrees of freedom. So if you recall from earlier, our duality says that the number of bosonic colors is the level of the fermionic Trin-Simons field minus the rank of the fermionic gauge group. And that at strong coupling, that's approximately 1 − λ(f)nf. So that as I send lambda f to one, there are far fewer bosonic colors than there are fermionic colors. Recall that lambda is the ratio of the rank and the level. So then we can simply substitute NB into this equation and retrieve exactly the formula that we had earlier. Basically, the bosonic density per color is far higher than the fermionic density per color by precisely this factor of 1/(1 − λ)f. So these transition temperatures are actually identified. You can also understand the slope in that way. So on the bosonic side of the duality, as you go towards as you begin to transition towards the quantum regime, the chemical potential of the bosons is being sent to zero. It never reaches zero in 2+1 dimensions, but it approaches zero. And we can approximate the energy density in this regime because it's easily evaluated in the free bosonic theory. So here I'm just calculating the expected energy density, and it takes this following form, pi over 12 nb m0 t squared. This gives a linear specific heat, which is determined simply by the mass and the number of bosonic colors. And then again, using this duality, we get pi over 6, the same 1 minus lambda f factor that we had before. So that's basically, are there any questions on this before I conclude? Okay, so just as a brief summary, we've demonstrated that the low temperature state of this large N Chern-Simons Fermi system is a Landau-Fermi liquid. And then we've used this fact to demonstrate that Landau-Fermi liquid theory actually needs to be augmented for 2+1 dimensional systems. I showed you how to do one of these augmentations. The Hall conductivity is currently under investigation. We also calculated some zero temperature transport coefficients, and we observed a novel regime at strong coupling, which is described by a weakly coupled Bose gas. The further questions are really the ones I've already mentioned. How do we characterize parity odd transport within Fermi liquid theory? How general is this Reed identity that we noted in our calculation of transport coefficients? And just generally, a better understanding of this Bose-Fermi duality would be very nice. I'd say about 70% of the papers that are written on the subject are interested in this final point here. Though at the current stage of understanding, it's really just a mapping of parameters. What they do is they compute whatever they can on both sides of the theory, and they say, okay, can we find some mapping of the parameters so that these things agree? A deeper physical understanding of what's going on, I don't think is there yet. That's all I've prepared. Thanks again for letting me speak to you. Yes.
Can you say anything about monopole operators?
About monopole operators. We haven't done any work on that. There was a recent paper on this by Georgie, which I can direct you to, but I unfortunately haven't done much with that.
More questions? Not then. Thank you, Mike, again.
Thanks.